So the group was organized under the pretense of like professional advancement and like dating life advancement, like relationship advancement, like, you know, guys who were struggling on their marriage or were starting a new business, or, you know, it was very much designed as like, we're going to fix your problem, whatever it is, because that's like, men are comfortable talking that way. People showed up and they're like, you know, hey, I've got this business and we're running into a lot of problems, and, you know, I'm looking for other smart, accomplished men who can like help me out or support me, give me advice or whatever. And then, yeah, by the third meeting, they're like, I'm so lonely.
That's Mark Manson, and we're talking about men's groups on this episode of The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. I'm your host, I'm Nastran Tavakolifar, but you can call me Naz, and we're trying to figure out gender roles for the modern era. So let's get stuck in. This week we have the second half of our interview with Mark Manson, where we talk about a men's group that transformed Mark's life.
We all basically came together in this group and like are acting as fathers for each other. Mm. We're acting as role models for each other, you know, like something to aspire to. And so, yeah, I think that was really important. And I don't think I could have gotten that in any other place.
And we talk about men's groups in general.
There are a variety of men's groups, right? And like, they really run the gamut. Like, some of them actually really do get into a lot of that kind of like tribal energy. Like, they're big on that tribal energy, you know, so they go to these like sweat lodges and they play bongos together and they like they camp together and hunt.
So this week we're going to hear from Mark Manson again. He's the author of The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, and he writes about self-development. We'll also hear from our two new co-producers, that's Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell, and I'll be giving a shout out to the podcast, The Broad Experience. Also, a bit of news. This is the last episode in our current season. Fret not, for we will be back on January 8th with a new season for you, and we're super excited about that. We'll tell you more about it at the end of the show. First, we're going to go back to Mark Manson. He was on the podcast a few weeks ago, where we asked him if there's a crisis in masculinity. This week, we'll be hearing about a men's group in Boston, which had a big impact on Mark, as well as hearing about a man who inspired him. The subject of men's groups and women's groups has come up a few times on this podcast. In fact, the first episode of The Gender Knot, which was on redefining and owning masculinity, actually began with a clip of one of our guests laughing about the very idea of men's groups and how no men he knows from his culture would ever join one.
You can imagine like what a men's group would look like if you got like a random sampling of the population, sat 10 American men down in a room, told them to talk about their feelings. First thing is, everyone would stand up and leave. If you made them sit down and talk about their feelings, I can only imagine what might happen.
That is Alec Malloy, who was responding to a conversation between myself and our guest, Lee Ware, in which Lee and I talked about the potential benefits of men's groups. Alec then appeared in a later episode about women's groups and men's groups after he joined a men's group and actually found it pretty helpful. So when Mark Manson started talking about the transformative power of men's groups, our ears perked up in the studio. What on earth goes on inside them? He is gonna tell us. Here it goes.
You said how in your mid-20s you went to therapy and you found a group of men in Boston. Now, that was really interesting for a few reasons. We did an episode looking at women's groups and men's groups, and that was super interesting because I had always dismissed sort of, you know, single-sex groups. I was like, why do we need them? But a lot of people said that it helped them explore their masculinity or their femininity if they were women. So that was interesting to me. And also the fact that I guess often as women, the role we play for the men in our lives, whether they're partners or friends and family and stuff, is to help them with their emotional issues. So I'm interested that you needed you found that a group of men was what helped you to deal with your emotional life. Because on the surface, that seems quite counterintuitive to how a lot of us women experience how men process their inner life.
Well, what's really interesting about that is that I spent most of my adolescence with a single mother. Pretty much all of my, or not all, but like most of my close friends when I was a teenager and young adult were women. I always had trouble making guy friends. You know, it was just me and my mom. And so I think I naturally related to women better. And I never, like, the whole guy thing, you know, like getting together and watching football and like farting and drinking beer. Like, that never came naturally to me.
But you seem like someone who can get on with guys, though. Like, when I read your pieces,
yeah,
I think that's why they probably resonate with men. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that I never felt very close to them. Like, I was always surrounded by women my whole early life. And I think I needed to bond and feel accepted by men. You know, in those men's groups that I was in, it was interesting. Like, pretty much all the guys there had absent fathers in their lives in one way or another. Pretty much all of them had, like, mostly female friends their whole lives, you know? So I think we needed that masculine influence, that healthy masculine influence in our life, because we had never experienced it before. And so we could only find that through each other. You know, one thing I remember talking about with one of the guys is I said, you know, it's like, we all grew up without a father. And so we all basically came together in this group and, like, are acting as fathers for each other.
Mm.
We're acting as role models for each other, you know, like, something to aspire to. And so, yeah, I think that was really important. And I don't think I could have gotten that in any other place.
And is that because, I don't know if this sounds like an obvious thing, but because they kind of understood your experience in society, even though the women are better with their emotional lives and stuff, do you still feel it's the fact that they are still treated, you know, they've got a different experience? Is that kind of what it hinges on?
I think a lot of it, yeah. Yeah, I think you could, you know, you could have a hypothetical society where, you know, everything is perfectly equal and everybody respects each other perfectly, and men and women would still have very different experiences. Just, you know, we're biologically different. We experience sex differently. And so it's like, from that flows a lot of differences in terms of, like, what you go through in life. And so, yeah, I think again, this is true of what I was saying earlier about the role models. Like, I think we all need role models, and we all naturally look for role models that we identify with. So people of the same gender, same ethnicity, same background, same orientation. We all look for these people when we're young. And it's really important for us to develop and mature, I think.
Who's a role model for you
these days? Oh man!
Do you not need them? Do you not need them anymore? You're like, I'm done.
I've transcended role models.
Or who have been role models for you in the past?
So again, there were, you know, I keep coming back to that group in Boston. You know, that group was the first time in my life that I really had role models that were in front of me. You know, like, when I was a teenager, like, I would sit in my room and, like, listen to metal records, and I would, like, be like, oh man, that guitarist, like, he's my role model, you know, like, stupid stuff like that you do when you're young. But, like,
not necessarily that stupid, though, because they might, I don't know, inspire a certain part of you.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's not stupid, but I mean, they're not there. Like,
right.
You don't actually know them or have a relationship with them, you know? So, like, this group in Boston was the first time in my life that I met men older than me that I was like, wow, I'd really like to be like this guy in 10 years or 20 years. And, like, that had never happened to me before. I never felt that way about my father. And, like, that was very influential on me. I think these days, you know, I feel like figuring out my own identity and my own masculinity and my own sexuality, you know, that project for me is over. I'm a boring married man now. So most of my role models these days, it's more professional oriented, you know, it's more about, like, my professional goals, you know, whereas like these kind of deep identity things with my gender and who I wanted to be in the world, that was a big thing I undertook years ago.
Mark, can you describe one of these guys for me? One of the guys where you thought, yeah, I want to be like him in 10, 15 years.
So I had a friend from the group, he was a very close friend for a while. And yeah, he was older. He was in his 40s. And keep in mind, when I met him, I was early 20, like, I was just freshly out of school. So I was like 23 or something, had no clue what I was doing with my life and what I was doing with myself. And this guy was just like, he was English, actually, coincidentally, but that's not why I looked up to him. don't get a big head. But he, you know, he had lived all over the world. He spoke a few different languages. He had a really interesting career in consulting. He had been married and divorced. He would invite, like, I would go over to his house and he would have these like dinner parties and stuff where, like, you know, there'd be 12 people in the room and they were from 9 different countries. And I just found that like absolutely fascinating. And he was very warm, very intelligent, but he was also very warm and emotionally open. I felt like emotionally, like, he had his shit together, and he was an older guy, which is, you know, so it's like, I looked at, he was kind of one of the first people, I guess one of the first older men in my life that I looked at and I was like, wow, I would like to be like this guy. Like, this is, if I had his life in 20 years, like, that would be awesome. And I had never felt like that before. I think there's, like I said, I think there's just something psychologically healthy for a young person to have that, to find that somewhere.
But with this guy, was it, what aspect of it was it? Was it that, you know, he sounds like he'd kind of had a really interesting life? Was it his curiosity, that he was emotionally stable, like the way you describe? Was there anything in particular that made you think, I really want to be like that?
I think two things in particular. One was, he was very multicultural, or I guess he was, you know, global. And I had always, it had always been kind of a dream of mine to be like that, to be like a man of the world or whatever. But I think at that age, that didn't seem realistic or acceptable. You know, like, it, that seemed like a silly fantasy. And so meeting a guy who, like, spent a month in India for work and then a month in Japan and then came home for a few months, and, like, you know, like, it was just so cool to me. It was like, holy crap, I didn't even know that was possible. And, like, he knew tons about food and dancing and, like, art, and he did it in a cool way. Like, it was something that was really admirable, and I had never seen that before. You know, to me, my experience growing up was like, the men that were admirable were like football players and billionaires and stuff. So to meet a guy like this, like, that was kind of a big eye opener to me, that, like, oh, this is like, you can have a, like, a really respectable, cool life like this. And then I think that the other thing was that he was really good with his emotions. Like, he was very honest and very good at communicating how he felt, but doing it in a way that was, like, respectful and empowering. You mentioned earlier, like, do we want people just sitting around talking about their feelings all the time? Like, yeah, we don't really, but, like, there's a good way to talk about your feelings and there's a bad way to talk about your feelings. And I think, like, kind of the bad way to talk about your feelings, in the way that men are deemed weak for doing, is when they sit around, they're like, well, you know, I owe all this money to the bank and it's my client left and I don't know what I'm going to do about rent. You know, like, when you kind of, like, fall into this, like, woe is me, you know, the world sucks, look at me. I think that's a weak way of communicating your emotions, you know, whereas the way he did it was, like, very, like, even if he was upset or insecure, like, he communicated in a way that was empowering. You know, he was like, hey, I've got all these problems in my life right now and I'm kind of freaking out about it, but I'm going to work on this and I really want to do this. And, you know, hey, if you can support me in any way, like, I'd really be appreciative. Your friendship means a lot to me. Like, he would say things like that. And it's like, wow, he's being very vulnerable and open. But he sounds strong, too. And I had never seen that before in a man.
Well, it sounds like it goes to the responsibility thing you said before, where,
yes,
that was a key thing. Mark, I wanted to just quickly go back to the men's groups again. Can you describe what actually happened in these groups? Because, again, I'm interested in these spaces where, like, you know, which was so transformative, and it kind of seems to come up. Are you going to tell me it was really boring?
Yeah, there were virgin sacrifices and danced around and
you had a big bonfire.
Bonfires. So this is the funny thing. So, like I said, there are a variety of men's groups, right? And, like, they really run the gamut. Like, some of them actually really do get into a lot of that kind of, like, tribal energy. Like, they're big on that tribal energy, you know, so they go to these, like, sweat lodges and they play bongos together and they, like, they camp together and hunt and try to get in touch with their primal masculinity or what, you know. I don't really buy into that. That kind of stuff never appealed to me, and you
sounds
know, hey,
fun,
if that
though.
Works for if that works for some guys, that's fine, but, you know, that was never really my thing. This group, it was actually much more, it was actually very boring. It was kind of a glorified group therapy. I mean, So the group was organized under the pretense of like professional advancement and like dating life advancement, like relationship advancement, like, you know, guys who were struggling on their marriage were starting a new business.
That sounds very goal orientated, which is interesting because I wonder
it was extremely goal orientated.
If that's draws men in to be like, we're going to solve X. I don't know.
Yes. Yes, exactly. It was very much designed as like, we're going to fix your problem, whatever it is, because men are comfortable talking that way. They're not comfortable talking like, I'm lonely and I'm depressed and I feel horrible, like help, you know.
Was it clear that men were there for the latter? Like they were
Once you were in and you got to know everybody, it was clear that that's why everybody was there. Uh-huh. But yeah, on the surface, it was like people showed up and they're like, you know, hey, I've got this business and we're running into a lot of problems and, you know, I'm looking for other smart, accomplished men who can like help me out or support me, give me advice or whatever. And then, yeah, by the third meeting, they're like, I'm so lonely. But it was good. So there were meetings where we would actually go meet. It was always really funny because there's such a stigma around like men's groups. So we called our this is so childish, but I'm being completely honest. So we used to book rooms at public libraries, and we told the libraries that we were the Boston Master Debater Society. And so we would go to these meetings, like very secret, like, oh, I'm here for the debate society. And they're like, oh, yeah, room C, you know.
Did they know it was nonsense, though? Or
I don't know. Nobody asked questions. So you go in this room, you know, and there'd be like 20, 30 guys there. And usually, like, they would, like, tap a guy to, like, kind of, like, talk about something he was very knowledgeable about. You know, so sometimes guys would get up and talk about dealing with coworkers or managing better or, you know, or another time a guy would get up and talk about having a happy marriage or, you know, just basic stuff. And then, but then the real part was kind of, it would kind of open up to discussion. And that's when like the real stuff would come out. And then we would have more informal stuff where, you know, it'd just be a Friday night and all the single guys would go get beers together somewhere.
No, it's interesting, men's groups, because people keep talking about like, yeah, I joined this men's group and, you know, it really helped. That's why we're so curious on this. And then like, what is going on in these men's groups? If you had to describe in one or two sentences what your ideal man is, how would you describe
my ideal,
that?
I feel like I'm on one of those dating TV shows.
You can interpret it anyway.
He would be tall with blue eyes.
But description of like, what to you, and maybe going back to emotionally healthy, what to you is sort of like a cool, emotionally healthy man?
This is kind of my view of, I guess, feminism in general. Like, this is my view of equality, is really like, you can't get caught up in all of the superficial stuff. And superficial stuff includes both like looks and biological things, but also professions and stuff like that. For me, real equality comes when people, both men and women, learn to become self-directed and take responsibility for themselves. And whatever direction they choose for themselves, whichever way they decide to go, there's no social judgment. There's no systemic judgment against that. You know, so when you say like, what's my ideal man, it's the same as an ideal woman. It's somebody who's self-directed and accountable to themselves and emotionally healthy about it, you know, like is open with their feelings, expresses them well, takes responsibility for them, and is able to act on what they want.
So some news on the Gender Knot. We have two new co-producers on the team. They are Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell. The three of us had a chat about men's groups and women's groups. We hear from Jonathan first.
I really like his thoughts on men's group. I like the ideas of men's groups. I do find other men tend to be a bit awkward talking about feelings. I don't know, just in groups in general, just like when you're out and about with your friends, they don't really open up. But when you are alone with men, one-on-one, or in a smaller group, a more intimate setting, I feel like that's when people start actually opening up and talking about their feelings like more properly.
Are you in a men's group?
No, I'm not in a men's group.
Are you in a women's group, sir?
No, I'm not at the moment, but I've been in groups that are similar for women, which I found this really interesting because it gave that male perspective of what those groups look like for men.
Wait, do you mean there are women's groups that aren't billed as women's groups, but in effect they're women's groups?
Right, yeah, like a book club or I'm trying to think of others. I was in this one that was a bachelor viewing party group of women, which was pretty ridiculous. But
what does that mean?
So the like really cheesy American show, The Bachelor, about dating, but it was like a group of women who got together every Monday and watched it, and so there was that purpose to get together, but it was still a group of women and kind of a place to just catch up on how we're all doing.
And did they talk about non-Bachelor show things?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I feel like there's usually that other reason to get together, but it effectively is a group of women.
So what's interesting, I was recently at a conference for shrinks, which is exactly the kind of thing I'd go to, and there were all these male shrinks, and every single one of them talked about being in a men's group and how it changed their life.
Really?
So that was kind of, yeah, it was weird hearing Mark say kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I've been in situations where I've been in football teams before, and you know, in a group setting, when you're on like a football team social or something, you know, the guys try and be quite laddie. They try and be sort of the alpha male. They try and impress each other. And then every now and then, sort of over the evening, people sort of break off into smaller groups, and then you end up getting people like one-on-one or something, and then people just start, have had a bit to drink, and they start opening up a bit and start having a really deep conversations and talking about feelings. But they would never do that at the start of the night or without alcohol. They wouldn't do it in front of like the big group, but they do it in smaller groups. And I think something about the men's group, which Mark kind of talks about, it's a more intimate setting. It's more kind of quiet. It's the right environment for that. And I think men are together in like a football team environment. They are trying to compete to be the alpha male. But when you take them away from that into a more like, I don't know, more comfortable and less intense environment, they do sort of start to talk about these things.
But I also guess it's just the men who turn up want to talk, even if they haven't.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Would either of you join a men's or women's group?
I don't know. It'd have to be the right kind. It sounds like you've got to find the one for you. Or maybe trial a few.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about them, too, is that they're kind of anonymous people that you don't necessarily know, as opposed to creating a group out of people you already know. I feel like that's a little easier, at least in my experience, to open up to. So that was kind of different.
Mark talks about going for a drink with some of the guys afterwards. And I don't know if I'd want that in a man's group, because you're kind of there anonymously and you can say what you want, and that's the end of the session and you're going to go home. I don't know if you'd want to... It'd be nice to become friends with them, but at the same time, do you really want that? Are you there to make friends, or are you there to talk about your issues in an anonymous environment?
Oh, interesting. I would want out of that friendship or support system. For a women's
It depends
group.
If it's more like a counselling thing or more of a friendship kind of who can talk about feelings group.
But this is interesting because, Jonathan, it's like you're saying that if you open up lots, then you don't want that person to get too close to you. It also almost sounds like a bit of a defense mechanism. Like, if I'm going to open up, it has to be to someone who I'm not going to see day to day, kind of. Whereas with Sam, you want to open up as a way to get closer to someone.
Right. Yeah, have that support system.
I think it's a case of you've got people that you're close to in your life and you've got friends in your life. You don't necessarily need... I don't feel the need to join a group to try and make friends. I'm quite happy with, you know, how my life's going in that sense. But if there wasn't that I wanted to talk about, that I didn't feel the people in my life I could approach to talk about those issues, then I would want a group that I didn't have to, I wouldn't want to find a friend group that I could talk about issues with. I'd want a sort of anonymous thing.
Okay, so before we end this episode, two quick things. First of all, this is our last episode for this season, but we will be back on January 8th with our second season. We will be trying to untangle a host of questions, including, does gender affect business? Are women too compassionate? And we'll be going back to the tricky subject of men and feminism. We will also be coming back with a male co-host, and we're excited about that. So that's 8th January 2018. Mark that in your diaries now. Also, before we go, we want to give a quick shout out to The Broad Experience. This is a fantastic podcast about women and the workplace. It's hosted by Ashley Miltight, and I think any woman will be able to relate to so many of the topics which come up. Actually, the last episode was especially good. It was about why women find it hard to say no in the workplace. And another episode I really liked looked at why women work for free and the trouble we sometimes have in knowing the market value of our work and in asking for it. These are both things I've seen and experienced and can really relate to and have a pretty complicated relationship with. And what I like is that Ashley's approach is a really good mix of discussing women's actual experiences while also having experts who can help to guide us on what we can do next. So it's a really helpful and useful podcast as well. We've linked to it in the details to this show. Do check it out. That's The Broad Experience. That's all for us now. We're off to frantically record the next season. Have a lovely rest of the year. Happy Christmas, happy Hanukkah, and happy any other festivals that are coming up. Big thanks for listening to the show, and also thank you to those of you who've written in with your thoughts and feedback or left us reviews. We've really appreciated all of that, and it's been really helpful as well. And thanks to everyone who's helped spread the word about the Gender Knot. A big thank you to all our guests and also to everyone who's helped with this podcast in numerous ways. I also want to give a quick shout out to the folks at Audio Boom who distribute this show. A big thanks to them and especially to Tasha Proctor for securing our sponsors and to Karen Bevan for answering my 7,000 emails every week, all titled Urgent, and for generally being massively helpful and fantastic and really lovely too. Okay, we'll speak to you in 2018. You heard from Mark Manson talking about men's groups on this episode of The Gender Knot. It was presented by me. I'm Nastra Antavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short, and this episode was co-produced by Sam Baker, Jonathan Blackwell, and Katie Vogue. You can find out more at thegenderknot.com and drop us a line via our Facebook page or by emailing us. The address is thegenderknot@gmail.com. Please send us your thoughts, voice memos, and ideas for upcoming episodes, especially as we're busy recording the next season now, so we'd love to hear from you for that. Make our year wonderful by leaving us a review on iTunes. Have a fantastic rest of 2017, and we'll speak to you in 2018. Bye for now.